wake up and you go, oh my God, I understand what this says. And when you understand what it says, you stand there and you look around and you're going, the whole entire planet is in fiction. We got a lot of work to do to fix it.
That's right.
And you know, there's plenty of physics. You drop a frog in hot water, it'll jump out. Cold-blooded animal. Drop it in cold water, bring it up to a boil, and you'll cook it. You'll never know he was cooked. That's a fact. We, the people, are the same way. You have been boiled very slowly to believe in adverb, verb, world. The function is such. And every English teacher that ever wanted to teach prepositional phrases and tell the truth about this was put in the same asylum their children were put up for adoption. With that level of collusion, they control every English teacher in America.
And who's to say adverb verb is not possible about it?
It's a modification. You can never define a modification. It's only your opinion and presumption. And the rest of the people that you have to do contract with don't want to be a victim of your modification. They want the accuracy of a math problem. There is no modification here. We are coming down to an accuracy because one prepositional phrase does not make a sentence. It takes 13 words as the smallest sentence you can formulate. Most of my sentences, in all the writings I do, contain about 32 words in a sentence. It's rare that I do anything less than that. I've had some that are in the 20s, but most of them are in the 30s.
So is that one up there?
Where?
In the board right there?
Oh no, this is not a legal sentence.
No.
There's only 6 words. There's not enough information here.
No.
First thing, I don't have a... For the where is with the pen. You want to tell me where the brain is that can establish the verb he is? Where's the body with the knowledge to establish to get to where in the first place? Who wrote the sentence? We have to give it an author.
You did.
Well, that's because you saw this, but the point is, for the reason for the knowledge is with the claim of the where of the pen. By the author, which was I.
True.
I don't know, why would there be a limit? It doesn't seem like it seems kind of like a certain thing to think that there would be a limit.
Okay.
To the size of something.
Certain topics
forever, you know?
you need a minimum for some sentences and you need a maximum for others. There are some sentences that are, you know, go out to the car. It's a simple command. It doesn't deal with any kind of contracts. The reason for thinking is to abolish thinking, and we as humans are lazy. Because we are lazy, we will minimize our communication skills to get the job done. If you don't understand, go out to the car, your answer is, where's the car? You know, more information. So, when we finally have enough information, the task will be completed. It doesn't hurt anybody, but if I said, I'm going to sell you a house, it's located on land. I'm going to have a 25,000 word contract. It's going to explain all your plumbing, your electrical, your sewer, your geographical locations, your duties within your community, you as a citizen. It's going to cover all those different topics. It'll be in that contract. A contract is an offer and acceptance. My contract may not have enough information into it to satisfy you, and you're saying, this contract is not fulfilled. So I says, okay, you and I will sit down. We will put all the information that you and I both agree upon is required in this contract. And when we have enough information in the contract, we will then both sign it, and we will both comply with it. But if you and I both have limited education, we're going to have a limited contract. And at some point, when you get smarter, you're going to look at that and say, that's all modified. That says nothing. I'm going to break it. You're going to say, no, you're not. I'm going to go to war if you do. And that's exactly what happens. You go to war. Fiction in, fiction out. Marriage contracts are very vague. Very vague. That's why they take so much time to get a divorce. Because of all the new information that is accumulated from 20, 30, 40 years down the road, that wasn't in the original prenuptial contract. You just said, I do. Well, that doesn't buy you a whole lot. Everybody that's been married and divorced knows exactly what I'm talking about.
It puts his words at stake.
Exactly. And then the state takes all your assets. You had a question?
The shortest sentence I can think of in English language is I am. How would you write that in the English? Well, okay, but I
know
your
teacher
taught
you that I have a subject and a verb, and I am.
Right. But if you were to translate
lazy and you fall down on the job, you disqualify your sentence. When we took these documents to The Hague, since it was created in the 40s, used the modification of language just like all other 250 Supreme Courts on this planet. When we brought the 100, it was, I think 115 pages is what it came out to, in our lawsuits to The Hague, we articulated 4,600 years of man's history, contracts, how the contracts move through time to certify our positions, including showing them the forensic evidence. Then we brought all these arguments together into a linear equation of writing. We started every sentence in the World Court briefs with for, and every word after is or are was with, and except one sentence. In 115 pages, one sentence said is for. You know that the World Court judges, that's 15 judges at the time, and 87 employees spent 6 weeks at a cost of over $1 million. To figure out why is for was used when all other sentences were is with and they were disqualified, all 60 lawsuits, $40 billion worth of judgments because is for was used. Because I wrote a paragraph in two sentences. The first sentence was is with, and the second one was is for. I already took possession of the possessive is with. And the second sentence in there was a continuance. Rather than use a comma, I created a new sentence, and because it was a continuance with the authorization, it became an is for to go through the authorization. And with that explanation, we won the award on that. Those people spent 13 months tearing apart that document at a cost of $10 million. Because if they were going to adapt a new program that all countries on planet Earth were to adhere to stop global wars from taking place, they had to have an argument and a level of accuracy to give them the authority to say, don't go there, don't do that, you don't have authorization to kill another human being or blow them up. If you have a dispute, we now have a linear equation to both enforce our ideas, enforce our peace, and stop war on this planet. There hasn't been any wars on this planet since those World Court briefs were established. Yes.
Your statement there, you said that you started with the word war, your document?
The very first sentence of every sentence in that book and every sentence we've ever written in all of our lawsuits is for. Anybody starts a sentence with by, they come to a conclusion before establishing a fact. You can't come to a conclusion unless your facts are...
So every sentence has to begin with the word for?
Yes.
In a document?
Yes. Every sentence. It's the strongest of 65 prepositions to begin a sentence. We had to research every preposition, every article, and all the synonyms and variables. Then we took those definitions and quantumized them in now, time, jurisdiction, not the future, not the past, but now. And then we had to use the accuracy of the best. And we kept it simple. We only used 7 prepositions and only 14 articles. And of the 14 articles, it's rare for us to use articles like them. We keep it very simple. The, this, and these. This is singular, first-person article. These is plural for plural nouns. And the is used when the condition is generic, where we want to bring in both sides of an argument as a general statement, because we haven't came to a conclusion yet within our document. Mm-hmm.
How could you have every sentence begin with the word for and have an intelligent presentment?
It's mathematically certified, that's why. It's in a linear equation. From the beginning, when we write a lawsuit, you have to establish one oath. Because mm-hmm. you can't talk without an oath. The oath is in quantum. The oath has to then establish rules and regulations called a constitution. Constitution has it then being placed into an area of jurisdiction. The jurisdiction says where we're going to make this argument. These are the rules of the Constitution for the people that have an oath to live within that Constitution. Then the Constitution and the geographical location says what happened within the jurisdiction of this venue. The venue, let's say Las Vegas is a venue. You got into a car accident. Okay, we need the time, the place, the parties. And the moving party is liable. If you're parked and somebody hits you, that moving party is liable. If two moving parties are both moving, then we have rules called right-of-way. And the person we have right-of-way would then be the party that it gets the positive, and the moving party that didn't have right-of-way gets the negative. Even though they're both moving, the negative party gets the majority of the damage. If two parties bump, and both parties are unaware of the bump, then it's called an accident. An accident means there's no contract. There was no rules and regulations. Parking lots are private property outside the jurisdiction. And when the two cars are backing up out of a parking space and they bump into each other, that's called an accident. Both are assumed their own liability. So there's values to different sorts. Okay, now that we've got a geographical venue with a constitution, all the parties that are going to talk have an oath. We then put our time and our place together. We bring out the facts. And we only can give you a remedy if you have a damage. Damage has to have an award. The award has to be articulated, so we're going to find out exactly what level of award you're entitled to or what level of damage you're entitled to. It's a plus and a minus. If you damage another vessel and requires, like, stealing, it's a criminal award, then you go to jail. We have to remove you from society because now you broke the rules of our society. If it's just a commercial violation, then we have to see how much money you can commercially afford. And there's no jail time or loss of freedom from it. And then you come to a conclusion where you wrap everything up going, we followed all the rules and regulations and we have a contract. I offered, you accepted, we complied, and this is the end result. If two people cannot fulfill their contract, they bring it before a judge arbitrator who looks at the value of the contract. Did both parties fulfill all the rules and regulations of the contract, or are there deficiencies? Who is responsible for the deficiencies of the contract?
He's the trier of the facts.
Yes. So, but because man had no license, called a claim of the life, he only had his trust, which was vacated 45 days after he was born under Title 46, Section 1441. He was then dead. Once he was dead, he couldn't make a contract, so we had to teach him not how to read and write, not how to make a fact, how to be in fiction. And now because he is in fiction from A to Z, he says nothing, he owns nothing. And the only person that wins in this dispute between two nothings is how much do I get out of it as the judge arbitrator. I represent the government. And if I'm going to harvest you, I'm going to keep the richest one on the street because he's going to pay me the most money, and the other guy goes to jail because he's not productive. However, every now and then you get a judge with conscience, and he does the right thing for the right reason. And the truth is actually brought to the table, and the truth actually adjudicates the facts. But it's so rare, you're barely hearing documentation about it. When we go to the table with the truth and it gets documented, they try to cover it up and obstruct it from being published in every way, shape, and form. Because once the truth has been shown, it exposes all the fictions. And by exposing all the fictions, there's so much of it out there, it causes problems. And commerce still has to take place on planet Earth. Because if you stop commerce, you don't have food and people starve to death. We don't want to damage anybody. It's about educating everybody equally. It's about getting commerce more efficient, getting our leaders more efficient, about we the people not fighting with each other and having a peaceful environment.
Does Christianity have any place in this, or religion, or anything else like that?
Religion is a condition of fear. Mm-hmm. People behave themselves, they look themselves in the mirror, That's between you and the guy you're looking at in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
That's your religion.
Mm-hmm.
For real. That's your religion. Religion is a condition of truth. You only follow truth. You will make contract with that truth. And you will always honor your contract. That's religion. And it doesn't matter what religion you put a tag to. Those are your three rules of religion. I studied religion all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all the same. Truth, contract, and honor. And whether it's a simple contract of buying a loaf of bread at the store, I give you a firm, you give me a receipt back, and you get to walk out of the store with a loaf of bread, and outside the store a cop stops and said, you got a loaf of bread there. Did you pay for it? I say, yes, I have a receipt here. I have a bill of lading that proves that I have possession of my cargo. I gave her a postage stamp, which was called the money, to pay for the bill of lading of the bread to go from the store to the house and travel over the roads. You go out and you catch a fish in the river. You're given a fishing license. It has a stamp. You've got to buy a fish stamp. Because the post office is responsible for your vessel to transport the cargo over the highways called commerce. Because you caught a fish that they're in control of, you're transporting it to your house over their roads. So you have to buy a fish stamp. Because they monitor the water and control how many fish are taken and that everything remains healthy and safe. So that you as a vessel are not damaged. In other words, you're paying a regulation fee. Yes.
I understood you to say that parking lot is private property, say of a convenience store.
Yes.
And that police officer approaches you and says, did you purchase that? He has no jurisdiction of that.
Yes, he does. You've got a Federal Reserve note in your pocket, and he belongs to the government. As long as you carry the funds of the government, then you're entitled to his enforcement.
Okay.
And anybody, we were in the Federal District Courthouse, titled Puerto Rico, Portland, Oregon. The U.S. Marshals Service walked up to Janice Logan, Russell Gould, and myself and said, you're trespassing. He said, no, we're not. We have a contract to be here. We are sovereign citizens. We have a contract to appear here in court today. Marshals Service says, show us the money in your pocket. We all pulled out eagles, gold eagles. Russell had a Canadian eagle. Janice had a South African eagle. I had an American eagle. They're a Canadian maple leaf, Cougaron, and I had an American eagle. He says, we deal in gold and silver. I had gold and silver. Well, don't you use Federal Reserve notes? We're sovereign citizens dealing in commerce here with gold and silver for bartering. Give unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Give unto God what is God. He says, these people are sovereign. They're free to go. They're here under contract. They're not part of the Federal Reserve System. They're not citizens of Puerto Rico. We all had our badges as judges under the UND-States of our world, and we had our gold and silver. We were not vagrants. We were not obstructing. We had a contract to be there. And we were escorted out of the building because they said that the facilities were not available to us. As simple as that. There was no rudeness. There was no obstruction. And we vacated the building. We went out on the common sidewalk. We stepped off the plane of their existence, and we held court on the sidewalk as judges. And we had every camera in downtown Oregon from every skyscraper trained on us. And they had pictures of us waiting for us when we got to Springfield, Illinois, 5 days later, and held court there on the step on the sidewalk. And when the marshals came out of the courthouse and stepped into common, we deputized them as tip staff for us as judges. And the marshals stood there and said they will gladly serve as tip staff for In the Truth Court under a Title IV flag whenever we needed them.
Well, that brings up another issue. He mentioned earlier that we're not allowed to make our own money.
We're not making money.
But we can go out and pan for gold and create a coin of our own and use gold and silver as long as anyone will accept it for the value we put on it, can't we?
Yes, that's bartering. This here is a 1 troy ounce.
Mm-hmm.
It is so stipulated that it has been minted by the, it says minted from United States Strategic Stockpiles, United States Assay Office, San Francisco, certified 1981. It contains 999 quality silver, 31.1 grams, or 1 troy ounce. Troy ounce is 10 ounces to the pound, English pound. English ounces are 16 English ounces to the pound. So these sell for about 20 cents over whatever spot silver is.
Whatever your value is that you want to put on that with anyone else that wants to accept it.
Right. If I want to buy that bottle of water there, that you could probably purchase down at the store here for $1 in Fern, that would be a contract in Ferns. If this lady wants to sell me that bottle of water because I'm out on the strip here and it's 115 degrees and I'm about three swallows away from dying of starvation, I'll give her a troy ounce of silver for it. And if she's willing to barter for me, she can barter with it and accept it because she knows it has value someplace else, and she can go out and get another six bottles of water for what I just gave her one. So it becomes a contract that is applicable at that time.
So in other words, that answers the question. We do have
everything is worth what someone else is willing to pay for it. And that's as simple as it gets. It's contract. I offered, she accepted, we have a compliance, and it's bartering.
As long as we don't put legal tender to it.
But it is legal tender.
Well,
and it's lawful tender. And it's a bartering between her and I. It's not, but there's no written contract there like Federal Reserve. So if we take paper, paper doesn't have a value unless somebody's got a gun that says this has value.
Right.
And that's why we have a military, why we have a police force, to enforce the value of the money. However, if I walked up, silver in my pocket, tried to take that water from her that she had paid a Federal Reserve note for, the police are obligated, because they have a contract to protect the value of what is also bought with the Federal Reserve notes, and say stealing is against the law. The stealing is against all laws on this planet. All 6 billion people agree to that. If you take something from somebody else without permission, it's called rape. I rape you of the water, or of your civil rights, or anything else. It's a crime in all countries of this planet.
Except for it's in gun courts.
Well, that's usually the case, but the individual never knows that it's done to them. Remember, if you boil a frog, he won't know.
But if I go into court, I do it wrong, and I get...
But you did it wrong. You violated procedure.
So therefore, I get...
When you violate procedure, you say you're in nonsense. You lack knowledge. You become a ward of the state. As a ward of the state, you must have a... They have jurisdiction over you then.
So then you get raped, and you just have to grin and bear it.
Well... Get educated first before you become a ward of the state.
Yeah, I'd be bare-ass naked over a car in San Francisco. Question now, do you always carry silver or gold with you then at all times?
Yes. I carry usually about 3 ounces of gold bullion with me and several ounces of silver with me.
And
I can go just about anywhere, and I'm liquid in any country I go to. You go overseas in foreign governments. Gold will open a lot of doors that are closed to paper.
So then, person in here, if we don't have enough money to have gold, then we should at least be carrying silver then.
I would advise at least $21 in value, an equitable value. If you have $21
of the reserve,
you cannot be classified as a vagrant. That's the law. It goes back biblical, 21 pieces of silver.
Mm-hmm.
Make contract.
But if silver is, there's a difference between silver and paper, Federal Reserve note.
Right.
So Federal Reserve note is a liability.
In fiction, the $21, fiction will acknowledge $21. In the truth, you need 3 pieces of silver, the 3 troy ounces. Or you can carry on a 1/10 ounce
like this
piece of gold, which is worth $31.
Really? So everybody should have something like that in their wallet or their purse or something?
Right. Whoever gets... Whoever can say I'm sovereign, a police officer can say, or a marshal can say, because they're all taking courses in this technology now. With 100 million people already online, 12,000 new students a day, it is exponentializing themselves. And so the fiction says to you, show me your value of your sovereignty if you're saying you're sovereign. If you don't have any gold and silver, then you don't know what you're doing. Well, I forgot it, sitting at home.
So basically then, if I'm saying I'm sovereign, I need to have a piece of gold with me, a gold...
You need a maritime contract.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want one of those, definitely.
You want a maritime contract. It tells you who you are, that you know, but you've got to be able to prove it as well. Anybody can copy. Copying is cheating.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have knowledge, you must possess the knowledge of your awareness if you want to have jurisdiction. And when you go into court, the judge says you can't use your knowledge. Prove to me you know who you are. Show me your knowledge. stand up here and do a presentation to me and show me your intelligence. If you can't prove your intelligence, then you must be awarded the state. In nonsense.
I can do that. Make sure I have all the bases covered. I mean, something like that, as well as the actual gold for silver substance.
Remember, would the government tell everybody, you're innocent until proven guilty?
That's actually, it's guilty until you prove self-innocent now.
That went out years ago, yeah. My attorney told me.
Wait a minute. Think of what I just said to you.
You're innocent.
And in means no, and nonsense is knowledge. You're in lack of knowledge until you're proven guilty. So what are you? In guilty, the definition of guilty is responsible until you're proven knowledgeable. So you lack knowledge. We presume you to lack knowledge until you can prove your knowledge. That's what it means. When I go in the court, I plead guilty in the truth to the law written in the truth. Show me the law written in the truth or vacate. Case dismissed.
So that's what you tell the judge?
Yeah.
I state that again. I am guilty
for... No, I wish to enter a pleading in the truth for a law written in the truth. Show me the law written in the truth or vacate your position. I know what the guilt is. The guilt is a condition of knowledge. I have the knowledge. I am showing you my knowledge through my prepositional phrases, through my ability to articulate language. I can identify all the parts of speech. I can identify the procedures to get the correct answer. Show me your procedure written in the truth or vacate your position. Show me that you know how to proceduralize your words so that your words are not obstructed. If you can't show me that, vacate your position. I don't say dismiss it. This means demon god of the underworld for mischief in the court. A district is a demon god of the underworld for trickery in the court. A district, D-I-S-T-R-I-C-T, is an original construction, original jurisdiction. A director, D-rector, is an original construction. And construction means to build, or for the building.
So, in other words, if you went into court and they asked you, how do you plead? You would say, guilty for in the truth of law?
Saying, I would like to enter a plea.
I would like to enter
a plea.
And
then you say the word guilty, the judge will say,
bam, good.
Bam, right, he's going to jump on it. So you're saying, pleadings is a condition of estoppel, where you're going to bring forth information. You're bringing forth the information and the truth. I want to see the law to match it. Don't forget, truth has to be in truth. Same jurisdiction. Rule of one. Rule of equal.
Would you?
One idea, equal value.
Would you write that phrase on one of those pieces of paper so we can copy it down?
What's that?
What you were just saying, that the pleading is in guilty and truth.
One of those, if you plead, you know, when the courts ask you, how did you plead? And you plead innocent. Why will a judge turn around and tell the clerk that that is a not guilty plea? Why would they do that?
Because not is a negative adverb modifying the word plead. So you've said nothing. The pleading in verb, not guilty. Guilty then becomes that you says you're not responsible, which means you lack knowledge. You become a ward of the state automatically.
So if you plead innocent, you become...
If you plead innocent, you just said, I hereby enter a plea of lack of knowledge. It's a catch-22. You can plead guilty, 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 or guilty. It's a trap. It's a trap of words. If you don't know the difference between your words, you're going to walk right into the trap. So if your end result is, you do this. For this witness.
With the knowledge.
With this knowledge, is with this claim, we'll stay with this again. These pleadings.